Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. What would you do if your firm was more profitable, if you made more money? We all want to build better businesses so we can be better architects. Better businesses start with planning your profit. Download our free course, Profit for Small Firm Architects, at entrearchitect.com/free course. Entree Architect Podcast, episode 144. Welcome back to the Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and this is the podcast dedicated to a successful life as a small firm architect. Whether you have plans to someday start your own firm, whether you're in the process of launching a startup, or you might be an experienced small firm architect just trying to make a difference, this podcast is for you. My goal is to inspire you to build a better business so that you may pursue your purpose with passion and live the life of your dreams. It's a critical part of your marketing plan. Well, you're out there hustling, you're shaking hands, you're responding to all your RFPs. You got that down, right? You've got that business development thing down. That's all business development. And at the other end, your brand is strong. Your website's working, right? We talked about that in past episodes. And all your marketing material, they're all telling your story, right? You have that all figured out. But somewhere in between the two, between business development and your branded marketing materials, lies a critical step to your success as a small firm architect. It's called public relations. And if you get it right, your phone will keep ringing with your next best clients. This week at Entree Architect Podcast, design evangelist Julie Taylor joins me to share 3 proven public relations strategies for small firm architects. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is sponsored by TrueStyle, the leader in high-end architectural interior doors. Learn more at TrueStyle.com. And Tanglewood Conservatories, combining the romanticism of the 19th century glass architecture with state-of-the-art technology of today. Learn more at TanglewoodConservatories.com. Julie Taylor, welcome to the Entree Architect Podcast.
Thanks so much. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks for joining me here today. We've been friends for a while. We sort of bumped into each other on social media, most likely Twitter. I think that's where we first found one another. Maybe somewhere else. It's been a while, so I'm not sure where we first found each other. But we've bumped into each other at conferences and conventions in the past. So we've been friends for a while. So and you're not an architect.
Correct.
You're a design evangelist.
I'm an honorary.
Yes, that's right.
LA architect.
That's right. Honorary AIA from LA. You're the founder and principal of Taylor & Company. And Taylor & Company is a firm specializing in PR, public relations, and marketing for architects and design professionals specifically. So that's who you work with. You work with us.
Correct.
And you've worked with some of the biggest names in the profession, some big firms. You're also a director on the board at AIA National. And you're also a writer and a speaker. So you've written a couple of books and you do a whole bunch of speaking.
Yes.
I've seen you speak. Very good speaker. So that's sort of a little bit of who you are and what you do. What I'd love to do is start off with your origin story, like we always do here at Entree Architect Podcast. Sort of go back to your where you first discovered architecture. What sort of drew you to that world? Because you've, you know, dedicated your profession to the architects and architectural profession. So what sort of inspired you to do that? And give us your origin story and your journey from that point up to where you are today.
Great. Happy to. Well, I've always been drawn to creative expression. I studied art history and fine arts. And when I decided not to go into that professionally, I always wrote too. So I went into magazine publishing. Before I did that, though, my first job out of college, I was a secretary receptionist, as many of my generation are. And I figured if I had to do that for a while, it would be something that was interesting. So I was at an architecture firm in Chicago. And so I learned some stuff on the job, typing spec memos and going back into the studio and asking what a soffit is and having them draw that out for me. And then when I moved to New York to be a magazine editor, I was at a magazine for interior designers. And so it was kind of a lovely thing that they could now read what I was writing. And I continued on that. I love the industry. The people are smart and creative. And I look at design and architecture as art in a business context. As much as I love fine art and some of the artists that I love the most, like Irving Penn or Richard Avedon, the photographers who had a thriving commercial practice as well as a thriving artistic practice, and you couldn't really tell the difference. So when I decided to go into PR and leave publishing, working it with in the design industries was the natural. And I came out to LA to run the PR and marketing communications at Pacific Design Center, the large design center. So I was working with furniture, with architects, with designers, representing the building, really getting into this industry and just loving it so much. So I started my own firm in 94, and my first client was SciArc, Southern California Institute of Architects. So went very deep heavy into the architecture realm, started working with some of the instructors and alumni, and the firm grew from there. The art in a business context is one thing that really does draw me. I'm fascinated by what architects do, that there's nothing there, and then there's this building that has to stand up and work and be incredible and on time and on budget and still have some kind of personal expression. It amazes me. It's also not my talent at all. The work that I was doing, photography and whatnot, it's all two-dimensional. I can't wrap my head around thinking about that. So I can be the biggest cheerleader for it. We don't represent fine artists and photographers pretty much for that reason. And so I'm thrilled to be able to, you know, be an advocate for architects who I truly feel need it in this, in the US for sure.
Yeah. And you're so passionate about it. I mean, I've known you for a while and I've seen you speak. You speak about architecture better than most architects. You know, there's clearly a passion of yours.
Yeah.
And I love the idea of art in a business context, that's what architecture is. What caused you to make that decision to go from publishing to PR? What made that transition?
It's not an unusual transition. I was working in New York and I was at a magazine and I loved it, but I was ready for a real change. in my life in a few different ways. And when the opportunity at Pacific Design Center came up, I was like, well, this is perfect. Brings me to LA, the whole other side of the country, a whole other side of the business. And having been an editor, before I decided to go into PR, I thought maybe I should write, you know, an article for PR people on how to really work with an editor. And then I never did that, which was good, because then I just kind of used all of those things to my benefit and to my clients' benefits. So I've sat at their desk. I've gotten poorly written press releases. I've gotten press releases with no contact information. So I know what they're doing. And I also keep my hand in it a little bit. I've been and am one of them. So I know how to talk to the media.
Yeah. And you still write, right? I mean, you do articles and you've written books. So it sort of allows you to kind of do both.
Yeah. I
find your world fascinating too. You know, from an architect's point of view, learn that business and marketing is a passion of mine. And so I'm sort of the reverse of you, that I became an architect and then discovered business and realized that I love the business end of things. Let's start our discussion here about public relations at the beginning. Sort of let's talk about the basics of PR. What is PR and how is it different than marketing? Because I know it's different, but how is it different than those? How are the two different?
Right. I kind of see marketing as the overall category, and that there's three elements within there. One is business development. So that's getting the job, your networking, RFPs, et cetera. Then there's public relations, which is your communications to the outside. To me, it goes from, you know, how the phone is answered, actually answered by a human, I always think is a good idea, getting magazine articles or writing writing articles yourself online or in the publications. And then very related is marketing communications, website, your LinkedIn, your blogs, your brochures, any of the elements that you would then send out to a potential client. And those two, they're all connected. Because the PR is in service to the business development and the choices that you make in terms of what you're going to put out there to the public should reflect the work that you want to get back in. So if you're tired of doing kitchen renos, don't get a whole bunch of kitchen renos published.
Yeah, right. And so that's public relations to get work published. To communicate to the outside world is what you said, right?
Right. And so there's and again, within public relations, there are a few different things. There's the media relations. So that's print, online. There are awards, because again, you're presenting your work out there for design awards. There's speaking engagements, a great way to get your, to make connections with potential clients. If you do school design, you want to go to the SCUP conference. If you do hotels, you want to go to HD. So you're right in front of potential clients.
Let's get into that a little bit. Let's talk about, the entree architect community is made up of small firms, typically less than 15 members in their firm. Most of us, the majority of us, are less than five or sole practitioners. And so these are really small firms. People, small businesses, essentially, not huge budgets for marketing or PR. What are some things that community can do to get their word out, to communicate their skills and their, how do they do that?
Right. Well, I think that one good way is to really partner with your clients and not take anything for granted. The client may be sending out a press release or working with the media. Don't assume that your name will be in that press release. It's something you really need to be proactive with.
Now, how do you do that tactfully?
It's it should be part of the contracts, and part of that is in the contract.
Okay, well, that's a good tip if to make sure that it is in the contract.
It's in the AIA contracts. So not always, you know, honored. But it's a conversation to have sooner rather than later with your home clients. You know, some clients don't want you to won't let you do anything. But it's something, I think it will attest to your relationship with your clients. You know, can we photograph this? How do you feel about it being published? Maybe we can do it without your name. So there are a lot of different variations, but it's having a real kind of human conversation with your clients.
Yeah, I found we do residential architecture at my firm, additions and alterations, you know, whole house renovations. Mm-hmm. And it is in our agreement. It's part of our agreement. We use our own agreement, and in our agreement, it says we have the right to photograph it and we have the right to publicize it. And we review that contract right up front, and we have that discussion. And what I find is that it's usually something, it's a point of honor that clients, typically my clients, when I say that I want to publish your work when we're done, they're really honored by that. And I've had clients who say when they hire me, I want a project that you can publish.
Right.
You know,
well, that's great.
And I want it on your website. You know, I want you to promote my site. It's something of pride for them. And so if you sort of position it in that way, it may also be easier to have that conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really do think having it sooner, because I find that there's this kind of fear or timidness to ask for too much, because at the end of the day, you just want to be able to build that building, right. You know, and don't want to, like, you know, rock the boat at all. But it's. And today, where we're in a hypermedia, you know, culture, it's almost if you're not in the media, then you almost don't exist.
Right, exactly. Let's take a quick break here to say thank you to two of our platform sponsors here at Entree Architect, True Style Doors and Tanglewood Conservatories. As platform sponsors, these companies have provided funding and support for our overall mission to become an influential force in the profession of architecture. They recognize the need for small firms like you and me to build better businesses in order to be better architects. And both of these companies are run by great people. I've met them. They're passionate about their products, and they want to share their knowledge with you. So listen up and connect with them. Say thanks for sponsoring Entree Architect. Then specify their products, and by supporting them, you'll be supporting us. True Style is passionate about providing us small firm architects with the inspiration and tools to transform our designs with the most distinctive, authentic, and the most special doors available. With more than 400 made-to-order styles, True Style offers premium MDF doors for painted applications and 20, count them, 20 standard species of wood across all architectural categories, from traditional to contemporary and everything in between. Every True Style door is made to order. True Style, driven by design. Visit TrueStyle.com and start designing your doors today. That's TrueStyle, TrueStyle.com. And my friends at Tanglewood Conservatories, they custom design and they build authentic residential and commercial conservatories, combining the romanticism of the 19th century glass architecture with state-of-the-art technology and master craftsmanship. Whether your designs call for a pool enclosure, a gazebo, a greenhouse, a unique light-filled living space, Tanglewood Conservatories will help you create a custom masterpiece for your clients. These things are beautiful. Check them out at tanglewoodconservatories.com. Just go peek around. Amazing photographs of the things they've built there. Tanglewood Conservatories, anything else is just a room. For more information, go visit tanglewoodconservatories.com. What about, other than, you know, getting published, taking photographs of the site, but getting it published, what are some other things that architects can do to get noticed?
One of my pet peeves is the building sign. It is remarkable to me how many people do not put a sign up at the job site.
Yeah.
It is the cheapest, easiest. Again, sometimes like, well, the client is putting one together, or there's the official, you know, sign that lists 1,000 people in all caps block letters that you can't read when you drive by.
Right.
And take a look. The construction companies are never shy about it. Of course, they control it. They're on there on the site, and they have 1,000 huge banners. It's the easiest thing to do. It is, and again, there's sometimes that fear.
Yeah.
Maybe that needs to go in the contract, you know, and have it be, you know, don't have it be teeny and, you know, thin white type on a black background. You know, you don't need to make it a design problem. Take your logo. If your logo is just letters, then put the word architecture or design, whatever is applicable, under it. That is the cheapest advertising and, you know, marketing and profile that you could have.
Yeah, I can tell you that works. That works. Mm-hmm. A big majority of our projects reference the sign. It may not be mm-hmm. the only thing they've seen, but right. they reference, oh, I've seen your sign all over town. You know, yeah. and it's very, you know, I think it needs to be very recognizable. It needs to be part of your brand. So when they see mm-hmm. it, they recognize it. And what you talked about with the word architect or design, that needs to be legible at 25, 30 miles an hour.
Yes.
You know, so that'd be very, you know, the phone number is less important than the word architecture, because if they're interested, they'll turn around and come back and get the phone number. The word that they, as they're driving by, they need to know that that sign is the architect sign. And then they'll come back and they'll look at it.
Absolutely. Or then they can Google it and,
yeah.
you know, and there you are. And one really good strategy is to be in different types of venues. So you have your sign, maybe you have an article in a local newspaper, maybe you're showing up at an event. So if someone sees you in two different kinds of venues, they think they've seen you everywhere. That's how our brain works.
Yeah. Yeah.
So keeping that consistent, I think, is really important. And basically, whatever you do, whether it's your social media or writing, make it doable for yourself so that you will do it and will be consistent.
Yeah.
With you, it, I think.
You want a strategy, right? I mean, you're talking about
absolutely
planning this out, saying, this is my strategy. I'm going to mm-hmm. have my sign out there. I'm going to have a Facebook page. I'm going to have my website. I'm going to try to do some speaking locally. You know, maybe I'll do the home show. So wherever that your strategy is, mm-hmm. it can be, you know, you get recognized in two or three different places.
Right.
And then, like you said, they think that you're the, you know, the biggest name in the region
yeah.
because they've seen you two or three times.
Right. And plan it out. I mean, don't you work with architects on a business plan?
Right.
And part of your marketing plan has got to be part of that so that you're allocating those dollars. And those dollars also need to go to photography.
Yeah. Professional photography.
Professional photography is not an expense. It's an investment. Because at the end of the day, it's really all you have. So that is super, super important.
And that'll help you get published, because a lot of those local publications are looking for that photography.
Yeah, a lot of publications are not necessarily sending their own photographers anymore. So with that, you want to be able to have enough photos taken at various angles, not all horizontal from half a football field away. I always like to say that I want to see photographs where I feel like I'm a participant rather than an observer. And that's a good guideline. And also get some good strong verticals, because that's what covers look like.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good tip. And details, you know, details sort of bring you right into that project.
Some details as well, yeah.
Mix them in.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts about getting published regionally or locally versus nationally?
They're both good. It's all good. regionally will definitely talk to that local market much, you know, much more directly. And sometimes it can be, I don't want to say easy, but a little easier. The editors and those people are in your town. If they do events at a store, go there, meet the editors, meet the writers, you know, so you can strike up that kind of personal relationship much easier than you can with the national, you know, magazines. The national magazines, particularly the consumer ones, well, really all of them, the competition for projects, it is harder and harder. Because a project is good, generally isn't enough. Not only does it have to be like great and perfect, but there needs to be a story to it. What's the story to it? And it's, I know that it can be confusing. A lot of people are like, you might look at a magazine and go, wait, my stuff's better than that. And it may be. But you have to remember, on the other side, the editors are people. They have their likes, their dislikes. They may have seen 18, Eames lounge chairs, you know, in the last 18 projects. Maybe they just don't like that little kind of tiny mirrored tile. You know, whatever it is, they're human too. But you do need to know the publications. You do need to study them, see where they're at, see what they're doing. And then also these days, with there's fewer pages, actual pages, but there's a lot of space online. So many publications have really active online portals, and really more people, if you think about it, are going to see that. And then you can post that on your Facebook, and you know, any media you get, you want to leverage that. So let your clients, potential and existing clients, know what's going on with you.
That could also, the online can also be the entry point to the print version.
Mm-hmm.
We've actually had, yeah. We had work. We actually, Anne-Marie, my wife, who's my partner, and I submitted a project of our own house in This Old House magazine for a contest. Mm-hmm. We didn't win the contest, but we got recognized, and then they published the project on their website. They liked they must have gotten some traffic. Then they called us, and they wanted to do a print version of it. And so mm-hmm. they came in, and they shot the project for print version. And then while they were here, because they want to, you know, use their resources wisely, they actually shot three other pieces of our house and did three separate articles in This Old House magazine.
Fabulous.
And so getting in at the bottom through a public contest got us three spots in This Old House magazine.
Right. Yeah. And that's what, design awards, a lot of publications sponsor them. So that prize is getting published. And then they also get to know you. Then they know your work. There are a lot of design awards programs. So that's another thing that you need to kind of plan out, you know, which will give me the most exposure, because you can spend an awful lot of money on these. And so you really do want to plan out, what's my budget for these design entry fees, and which do I have the most chance of, which are going to give me the most notoriety and mean the most. With awards, because I've run awards committees, and so I've been in the room. Again, it's the thing to know is that if you don't win an award or you don't get published, it's not personal.
Yeah.
And it depends again on the person, particularly in juries. I've seen a project get an honor award one year that the year before didn't even get a second look. It all depends on who the people are.
Yeah, and especially the larger competitions as well. Mm-hmm. There's so many submissions that first round, I've been on juries too, and that first round is a very quick, you know, eyeball, and it goes in this pile or this pile. you know, because they're just trying to filter out the best projects. And so your project, which may be one of the best ones, may just go in the wrong pile and you're done. And so it's go ahead.
Yeah. And it's how you present it.
Right.
Yesterday reviewing an award submission, because we do that for our clients with a client, and we had the beautiful renderings, and then we had more of the kind of diagrams and context. And he said, well, don't you want to explain the context and diagrams first? I said, we have to think not like an architect in this case. We want to bring them in, seduce them with the gorgeous image first. He goes, okay, so we do this one image and then the diagrams? I said, no, we do all the beautiful, gorgeous images, make them want to know more. You know, if they're engaged in that, then they'll want to know more.
Yeah, yeah, that's another good tip. A lot of good tips here, Julie.
Yeah, well, whatever we can do.
What are your thoughts on working with the Scout? A lot of the national journals or magazines, like Better Homes and Gardens and that kind of level magazine, a lot of them, you can partner up with a Scout who works independently of those magazines, but they go out looking for projects, looking for articles that they then write. And then they propose them to the magazines. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's great, because again, those are local people that you can make a relationship with. And if they really like the project, because they're going to be the ones who write it, they're going to really go to bat for you.
Yeah, and they also have the relationships with the decision makers.
Yeah, because they're on their stringers for those, you know, those publications. If they're based in New York or based in Des Moines or whatever, they need those local people. They need those, you know, people in all the different cities to report to them what's going on there. There's also, you know, a huge community of freelance writers who write for a lot of different publications. And so if you get to know one of them, they're always going to want to know what do you have that's good? What can I sell to one of the many publications, that they work with?
So we have photography and getting published, get that out there. There's signs, your construction sign. What's a third one that we could use to sort of give them three things that they could take away and go do?
One of the things that is really important is having your story and knowing how to talk about it.
Yeah. They've heard this before. We've been talking about this over and over again here at the podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes as architects, the writing and, you know, the comments can be really laden with jargon and archispeak and all of that stuff that when we're all together is great. We know what we're talking about. But clients don't always know what you're talking about. And so you want to be on that level. One of the things that amazes me about architects is how much else they need to know. One of our clients does hospitals and med schools. So I have an hour-long conversation with him. We're not talking about the building at all. We're talking about how doctors are trained, the changes in how they're trained from 15 years ago to today and what they need to look at tomorrow. So architects are able to put themselves in another person's shoes because they need to do that for their clients. So look at how they communicate and be able to communicate directly and more simply with them.
Yeah. So tell your story, know your story.
And then, know your story.
And then know how to tell that story.
Mm-hmm.
So really it's important for that story to be written from your client's point of view, not necessarily from your point of view.
Yeah. Yeah. This may be very gratifying for you to do, but that's not your point. It's about them.
Right.
You know, it's like, you know, if I'm looking to hire and I'll get a cover letter from someone that says, this would be really good for me. I want to know what's going to be good, you know, what they're going to give to us.
Right.
how they're going to make our business better and easier. So how are you going to create a home that your client is going to love? They've already trusted you. They've selected you out of hundreds of others. So they're already with you. So how are you going to work together to do that?
Yeah. So that's a great takeaway. I think those three things: sort of get focused on publishing, get your word out there, either locally or regionally. Then really make sure you have that sign out there, whatever project you're working on, make sure you have a sign that people can read. And then the third thing that we talked about is knowing your story and knowing how to communicate that story. So I think those are some great action steps that our community can go get out there and make a difference. So right. any other thoughts, Julie?
Any size firm.
Yeah.
From one person to 500. You know, they're the same. It's a matter of scale.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you, I know you work with large firms. Do you work with small firms as well?
We do. We do. We have a range of firm size. We also, as of a program, the Marketing and PR Blueprint, which is especially formulated for, you know, 1 to 3 person firm. I have a partner who specializes in business development. And we do a SWOT analysis. We look at all of your communications. And then we create a plan of action with very specific things to do and places to go. And then it's a plan that you go and implement.
That's great. Where can they find more information about that?
There should be some information on my website.
Okay.
And they can always contact me. And it's been great to see, you know, I'll get these emails, I'll get these e-blasts, you know, from those blueprint clients. And it's like, yay, they're doing it. They're making it work.
Yeah. Yeah. It is so gratifying when you sort of show people the way and then they go do it and it works.
Yeah.
It's exciting. So if people do want to find you online, it's Taylor-PR. It's Taylor-PR.com. That's your website. I'm sure there's a contact link there. If people wanted to email you, they can email you through there. On social media, you are Julie Taylor PR at Twitter. And on Facebook, you are Taylor.company. So facebook.com/Taylor.company. But you can just check out the website and learn all about Julie and her company and what they might be able to do for you. Julie, before we wrap up, I want to ask you that one last question that I've been asking a bunch of my guests here. Before we wrap up, what is the one thing that small firm architects can do today, right now, to build a better business for tomorrow?
Well, there's a tool that's newly available that comes from the AIA National, and it's been part of like the work that I've been doing as public director, and it's the AIA message book. And it has, again, like we're saying, how to build your story. What are the kind of words, how to talk to your clients, how to talk to a school board, what's important about, you know, the messages of what architects do, of what you do, how to connect. So it's, they just need to go to new.aia.org and search for message book and download the PDF. There's a lot of great information in there, and we're so proud and happy to be able, it's brand new.
Yeah,
you know, to be able to deliver this, brand new.
Yeah, that's exciting. I will find it, and we'll have a link on the show notes, so they can just go to entrearchitect.com/episode144, the number 144, and we'll have a link on the show notes directly to that, so they'll be able to find
it. Fabulous,
Julie. Great. Thank you very much for spending some time with us here and sharing your knowledge at the Entree Architect Podcast.
My pleasure. It's my favorite topic to talk about.
Complete show notes and a direct link to download this episode will be found at entrearchitect.com/episode144. Hey, and don't forget to visit the website to gain access to our digital course. It's free, Profit for Small Firm Architects, and learn how to build a powerful profit plan that will work for your small firm. Visit entrearchitect.com and click the button right there on the homepage. Hundreds of your fellow architects have already taken this course. It's a great place to get started building a better business. EntreArchitect.com. www.mindsetmarketing.com. My name is Mark Arlepage, and I'm an entrepreneur architect, and I encourage you to build a better business so you can be a better architect. Love, learn, and share what you know. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure, and when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns. What's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.